Hello there and welcome to the Middle East today. Coming to you from Beirut, I'm Mariam Saleh. Syria has witnessed an extremely sad Eid al-Adha holiday with a violation of an already very fragile UN Arab League ceasefire. Although all the major sides had agreed to the ceasefire, why was it easily broken and who is to benefit from the continuous fighting? Now with Lakhdar Brahimi's mission still on track, is there any hope of an end to the fighting and a political solution? Where do countries like Turkey and Qatar stand in all of this while they still refuse to negotiate with the Syrian government? On this edition, we'll try to understand where this issue is going and whether international will can force a viable ceasefire and spare the Syrian people. I am joined by Mr. Mufid Jaber here to discuss this issue with me. He is from the Middle East Center for Studies and Public Relations. I'm also joined by Talib Ibrahim, he's a political analyst, joining us from Damascus, and also Mr. Sharif Nashashibi from the Arab Media Watch. He's joining us from London. Let me start with you, Mr. Jaber. What do you think are the various or the main reasons for the failure of this ceasefire? Did it need more supervision, or do you think both sides did not really believe in it?
You know, this is a very complicated conflict, and you can't just ask for both parties to abide by a certain ceasefire, especially since the opposition in Syria, the armed opposition, is not united. So if one of the groups in the opposition were to decide to abide by the ceasefire, as well as the government, you're very likely to have many different groups, like Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups, who are going to, attempt to seek havoc, to wreak havoc by attempting as much as possible to make it so that the truce does not continue.
All right. So the main reasons are you're saying are mainly through the opposition. Do you think the international will or international bodies can do anything or should have done more on this?
In order for the truce to actually take place or to be effective, there must be an international agreement. It is not something that can be decided on a national level. There must be guarantees on part of Russia, for instance, and those backing the Syrian government, that they would pressure the Syrian government into abiding by the ceasefire. And this should also happen on the part of the U.S. and the parties that are supporting the armed resistance in Syria. Mm-hmm. So basically there should be an agreement between Russia and Iran on one hand, and on the other hand, the US, Turkey, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia, that each of these parties would pressure their client parties
into
abiding by the ceasefire, because this is not something that merely the government and the armed opposition can decide upon.
All right. But we're going to go into more details on the Western or the global political stance here. But first, let me go to Mr. Talib Ibrahim in Damascus. Who do you think Mr. Ibrahim was behind the violation of the ceasefire at a time when it seemed that the Syrian government was very much eager to stop the fighting? And also, you heard from the Syrian opposition groups, mainly specifically the opposition Free Syrian Army. They said they wanted to stop the fighting, but who was responsible for breaking the ceasefire?
Of course, when what had happened at the last Eid, the Syrian government was very serious in ceasefire, and we are in Syria. We look to the day in which no fire should be triggered in the Syrian territories. But unfortunately, there are some regional parts, such as Saudi Arabia, such as Qatar, such as Turkey. They don't want to find a political resolution, because that if we reach that truce in the Eid, in the last Eid, and that should be considered as a very important step to make a kind of to cool the situation in Syria, to make it cooler and cooler. This will open the way to a negotiation between Syrian government and between the opposition. And I think that will mean we will reach political resolution. Several times before this time, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, they stopped any political resolution, and they are depending on some militant groups inside Syria, such as Jabhat al-Nusra and other militant groups. So if we want to reach a real ceasefire and we will begin a real political resolution, there international community must apply pressure in Saudi Arabia, in Qatar, in Turkey to stop smuggling weapons and smuggling money and smuggling weaponry to the Syrian territories, and stop supporting those, stop providing logistic support for these terroristic groups who are working in Syria. Free Syrian Army is a fable. Indeed, only Al-Qaeda is the most important group which is fighting the Syrian territory by Jabhat al-Nusra. And this is heavily supported by Qatar and by Saudi Arabia and by Turkey. So if we can apply pressure in Qatar, yes, Saudi Arabia and Turkey, we can stop fighting inside Syria. Without this, it is impossible to make any real resolution. Uh-huh. But at the end, fighting may continue, but we have a real confidence in our Syrian army.
Mr. Ibrahim, if you're saying that Syria, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Turkey are backing the Al-Qaeda groups inside Syria, and who is backing the Free Syrian Army? Do they have certain Western support? Would they be willing to, for example, to succumb to any sort of international call for dialogue?
Of course, as I said, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Turkey are supporting Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda, it is the most important group who is fighting Syrian territories. And we have confidential information that about 200,000 fighters now are in Turkey, and some of them inside Syrian territories, and they are fighting. And if you look to the counts of the militants who are fighting inside Syria, the number is very, very high. It is more than what we expect from inside Syria. As an example, in Idlib, in Jabal al-Zawiya, the total Idlib province counts about 1.5 million. How we will find from 1.5 million, suppose all of them are opposing the Syrian government, how we will find about 200,000 militants are fighting the state? This is a real army. This is a real invasion to inside Syrian territory. If we want to stop fighting, we must apply pressure on the correct. About what you asked me, Free Syrian Army, as I said to you, it is a fable, and it is a blanket for Al-Qaeda. Through that, or behind that blanket, Al-Qaeda is working, and behind Al-Qaeda, Saudi Arabia, United States, Israeli intelligence, etc., etc., are working inside Syrian territories.
All right. Let me ask Mr. Nashashibi what he thinks about all of this. Mr. Nashashibi, I don't know if you agree with our guest, but it's clear that there's a rift within the Syrian opposition, although we've heard that Syrian opposition or the people who are opposing the government say that the Free Syrian Army does represent us, but at the same time, they're not the ones who are pulling all the strings inside Syria. And you have a lot of other groups, seemingly Al-Qaeda linked. We have heard this from the U.S., from several officials saying that they are the ones who want to continue the fighting and have actually broken the ceasefire.
The opposition has been fractured from the beginning, and this has really hindered its ability to speak with one voice. And when you're looking at on the ground, besides the issue of Al-Qaeda, the Free Syrian Army is not a homogenous fighting force. It is basically a franchise with it's an umbrella group for a number of fighting brigades and forces that operate under that name. And then you have jihadist fighters to add to the mix. So you have a very fractured situation. None of these forces are necessarily working together. Sometimes they have contradictory goals. So it is, in terms of a ceasefire, it would be extremely difficult to get an agreement from the opposition when there isn't the opposition. There are many oppositions. There is sometimes very little common ground between the various forces. So I think this is almost a predictable problem when you have a situation, not just in Syria, but in other countries, where opposition has been stifled for so long. Suddenly, when you get a situation like a revolution, you have all these voices coming up that have never been able to speak, let alone speak together. And then you have a very confusing situation where there are many, many voices, a lot of noise, and very little clarity.
What do you think that in Syria specifically, it's much more complicated than all the other Arab states that did witness some sort of an uprising? I mean, doesn't let's say there's a Syrian opposition, they are serious about having reform, but don't you think that what's happening, all these other voices, will be dragging them to a useless war? And how do you think this might end?
Look, I think in one way, yes, Syria is more complicated than the other Arab countries that have faced the Arab Spring, certainly because of the ethnic mix of Syria. But in another way, it is very similar to the other Arab countries because the reasons why the people have risen up are similar. It is to basically fighting for their right to determine their own futures. That is common among the Arab Spring countries. That is a common situation. Yes, it's more complicated by the ethnic mix, but people need to keep this in mind. What people are striving for is this goal. The means might be, you know, I'm very worried about the certain means with which factions of the opposition are trying to reach that goal. But I keep that goal in mind because this is something that I support for any country in the region, that the people should be able to determine their own futures. But I'm completely against the tactics, for instance, of Al-Qaeda and jihadist fighters, which are using the typical indiscriminate tactics that they use in many other Arab countries and Muslim countries, where ironically, the main victims of Al-Qaeda and these jihadist fighters are Muslims.
Mm-hmm. All right, Mr. Jaber, do you think that Lakhdar Brahimi will continue in his stance? You think he'll take a step backward? It seems that he's still insisting that he could probably make some kind of an effort, get the people together, or at least get the countries that are involved together. What do you think he can do light of what just happened?
From the beginning, the approach of Lakhdar Brahimi and his predecessor were faulty. What they should have done was, in the beginning, either way, it's not up to Lakhdar Brahimi to actually broker a truce or broker an actual solution. What should happen, inarguably, is that the different parties that are backing, as I said before, the opposition and the government should sit down on the table, because the outcome of the Syrian conflict is not decided in Syria, it is decided on a table that gathers the Russians and the U.S. So it is not up to either the opposition or the Syrian government. So mm-hmm. his task is not going to be as easy as many would have predicted it to be.
Where do you think the real the sticks in the wheel are preside? I mean, from which side? I mean, who is stopping his efforts from actually coming forward? I mean, although he does seem serious, he did have previous experiences in such issues, for example, in Lebanon and so on, he was at least able to somewhat stop the fighting. Do you think that he has said that Turkey, for example, has still refused to negotiate directly with the Syrian government? He says negotiating with the Syrian government is very important. You think that's where the issue lies?
On one hand, the Turks have already said that they would not negotiate with the Syrian government as long as Bashar al-Assad was in power. First, they agreed when Erdogan met with President Ahmadinejad that there would be some sort of negotiations, when Bashar al-Assad is in power. But eventually now, just very recently, the Turkish Prime Minister, Foreign Minister, has declared that the Turkish government would not negotiate or would not try to reach a solution as long as Bashar al-Assad was in power. So on one hand, yes, the Turks have gone into supporting the opposition to such an extent that they cannot go back, and now their only concern is to topple Bashar al-Assad without any, it is their only concern up to this point. But as I said before, this is not up to the Turks to decide. It is up to the U.S. to decide whether or not they are willing to discuss with the Russians the future of the region. And of course, there is the fact that the opposition in Syria, the armed opposition, is not a united front. So even if the Free Syrian Army were to agree to a certain solution with the Syrian government, there is the fact that there is a great number of groups, Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups and other groups, that have such a presence in Syria today that it is going to be impossible to try to counter their...
Yes.
Their attacks or their influence.
All right. Just before we lose them, ask Mr. Talib Brahim, would the Syrian government, headed by President Bashar Assad, be willing also to go into direct negotiations, not only with the Syrian opposition groups, but also with countries like Turkey, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia?
Of course, Syrian government is ready for dialogue, what we call it inside Syria, international dialogue between different parties to find political resolution to the crisis in Syria. What you have said and other colleagues said about the negotiation between Syrian government and Turkey and Qatar and Saudi Arabia, that reveals the problem or the Syrian crisis, it is not only internal crisis and it is not a matter of democracy or freedom, etc. It is a kind of regional struggle inside Syria, regional and international struggle inside Syria. So this, any dialogue and or any kind of negotiation, it should be multilateral. Sides must come to the table, and through this we will be able to find the resolution. Another issue, and please allow me to highlight it, we have a real confidence in our Syrian army. We can put an end to all the acts of terrorist groups, and we are able, our army is able to protect the state. But this will cost us a very, very heavy price. We don't want to pay it. If we can reach victory by political means, that is very good and it is favorite, and we prefer that. But if we have to pay the price by fighting, we are ready. If the others will know this very accurately, they will avoid any kind of escalation of violence inside Syria, because the fires should never be inside Syrian territory forever. It will burn others, even they are so far from Syrian lands.
Yes, are you saying that, some groups or some analysts have said that the Syrian government has threatened to enlarge this conflict into other countries? Do you think that there will be more of a greater conflict between Syria and Turkey, for instance, if Syria is using the Kurdish issue, for instance, to make it more of a dilemma for Turkey?
Of course, about the Turkish or the PKK, we are not supporting PKK, but now we are not preventing them from acting. In the past time, we were controlling our borders. We weren't allowing to the PKK to go to Turkish territories to fight the Turkish army. Now, for different circumstances, we are unable to make control 100% to our border. This is the issue. Other issue, we are not a part in the conflict between Syria and between PKK. Let them go to hell, both the PKK and Turkish government. But if we don't want to enlarge the conflict inside Syria. But if you look accurately about what is happening in Syria, Turkey is providing all kinds of support to the militants inside Syria, logistic support, etc., etc. And what is going inside Syria, it is a kind of Turkish aggression act against Syrian territory, against Syrian people, against the Syrian nation, against the Syrian army. Should we be patient forever, or should we transfer the fire to inside Turkish territory, state to state, not by Kurds? I think this is probable. We will not stay forever looking to the Turkish people destroying our army, our cities, etc., etc., without doing anything. Turkish people must know that, and they must be very much careful when dealing with Syria from a military point of view, because we have facilities. We have the adequate military force to attack very important targets inside Turkey, and Turkish army should never be able to defeat Syrian. They believe that they are able to make any change in the political equilibrium in the Middle East by military power. They are very, very much wrong, and NATO now is unable to make anything. We are sure of that. So if we will be put in the corner, we are able to act. Otherwise, we are looking to find political resolution and to put an end to this struggle as soon as possible, and without paying a very heavy price, nor to Syria, nor to Turkey, nor to others, because Turkish people is different from Erdogan government. This is very, very much obvious and very well known to us.
All right. Mr. Nashashibi, what do you think of this issue, since the Syrian government seems to be convinced that Turkey has declared war on Syria, although it hasn't been able to make a direct move since it doesn't have the backing of NATO? But do you think that they want to go all the way with the Syrians?
No, I don't think Turkey wants to go into Syria. I think I think all the countries that are presently involved in the Syrian conflict would prefer to maintain the status quo in the sense that they are supplying and helping fighters in Syria. It's a simpler solution for them than to actually bring troops into Syria. That would be a quagmire they would rather not have. They would rather just help fighters currently in Syria. And this brings me to the wider point of the irony here is that all the foreign actors that are involved in the Syrian conflict, they are not only necessarily part of the solution, but ironically, they're also part of the problem. Because on both sides, all these foreign players supporting fighters in Syria, ultimately, they have their own interests at heart in the conflict in Syria. It is only Syrians inside Syria that will have their own interests as paramount interests. So unfortunately, the conflict is being prolonged by the fact that fighters in Syria are being egged on both sides by their foreign supporters, because those foreign supporters, they are now so entrenched in their support of whichever side they're supporting that it's difficult for them to let go. And if their side loses, then their interests go down the drain. So we have a situation now where, you know, ironically, the same countries that Lakhdar Brahimi is trying to involve in a solution are also the primary problem.
So you don't think that he will get anywhere, that Lakhdar Brahimi will get anywhere with these countries? Perhaps, like our guest here in Beirut said, that Russia and the U.S. still might not get together on one table in order to agree on how to solve this issue?
I agree with your guest in Beirut. Lakhdar Brahimi and Kofi Annan before him, they are only as successful as the willingness or the ability of the foreign backers of the conflict in Syria to come together and find common ground. If they are unwilling to do so, and so far there is no sign that they are willing to do so, then Lakhdar Brahimi can do nothing. He cannot make a difference. He is dependent on all this, the players in this conflict coming together. And unfortunately, Lakhdar Brahimi has come to the job with exactly the same strategy as Kofi Annan. And he didn't succeed, and I don't see any sign at the moment that Lakhdar Brahimi is any closer to succeeding. It's ultimately not in his hands. It is in the hands of all the foreign backers of the conflict in Syria to come together and say, we need to put a stop to this. Lakhdar Brahimi on his own cannot do that, cannot do his job without the help of these foreign actors.
Uh-huh. All right, Mr. Jaber, where do you think this will be going? I mean, do you think that the United States, for example, after presidential election, we might see some kind of a different move, or will it remain? I mean, it seems the U.S. has made it a secondary issue by letting the other sides deal with it while still just backing them up. You know, we're with you till the end, and that's it.
Up to this point, it all depends. For instance, it's very important to see the outcome of the U.S. elections, because if, for instance, Romney were to become president, you know, his approach with regards to the Syrian conflict would be diametrically different to that of Obama. On the other hand, if Obama were to be reelected, which is a major, you know, issue with, you know, in regards to the Syrian conflict, if Obama were to be reelected, his approach, he would, you know, have less restrictions regarding how to deal with the situation in Syria than he has now. He might be much more willing to sit down with the Russians and decide upon a solution that would be favorable to everyone, instead of you know, trying to somewhat to appease you know, to appease the wants of certain parties. He would not take these into consideration if he were to be elected, reelected, and this would you know, prove to be extremely, you know, crucial to the solution that would take place in Syria. Most likely he would sit down on the table with the Russians and decide upon a solution without, you know, try to de-escalate the violence as much as possible, and try to find a reasonable political solution that would, you know, satisfy both the U.S. and the Russians.
Well, Mr. Shibi said that all sides that are supporting the various sides inside Syria have their own benefits. I mean, but is it to everybody's benefits that the fighting goes on?
You know, it is in the interest of Turkey and Saudi Arabia and Qatar to continue the conflict as much as possible, because their goal, their stated goal, and their goal is to topple Bashar al-Assad at all costs. This is not the, I believe, the intention of the U.S., because they have so many interests, you know, at heart, that, you know, their intentions are, you know, somewhat different from those of the other countries. And so, yes, since as long as Saudi Arabia and Qatar are still going to support these insurgents in Syria, we're going to see a continued escalation of conflict until the U.S. decides to reach a certain agreement.
All right, wonderful. Yeah. Mr. Mufid Jaber, I want to thank you very much for being with us. I also want to thank Mr. Sharif Nashashibi, who is joining us from London, and Mr. Talib Brahim, joining us from Damascus. Our email is metoday@presstv.com. Stay with Press TV. Goodbye for now.